This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
You once asked me what evil was. Things that you're better off not understanding.
I promised to do everything I could to protect you.
Protect me? From what?
In every child's nightmare, there's an element of truth.
The powers of this world are very strong.
They are stealing children. This is war.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to Popcorn Culture today, delivered to you via Skype. None of us are actually in the studio, but it is still us. I'm Lee Chui Lin, of course, and joined remotely, very far away, but, you know, in different rooms entirely, by Sharmila Ganesan and Arvind Yuvaraj.
Hello. Different realms, different dimensions. Who even knows?
It's like a multiverse.
Yeah. Let's go with that. Multiverse. Yeah. Multiverse, yeah. Sounds great. It makes this sound fun and adventurous, which I suppose in a sense it is. So we have been, we've just kind of restarted Popcorn Culture in a bid to tell people what we've been watching from home, since a lot of us are both working and watching from home at this point in time, with the outside world not being an option. So we're just going to take you through, I think, just all the various platforms and things that we've been going on. Who wants to start?
I'll start, because I watched something that I've been wanting to watch for like months and months and months. His Dark Materials, which premiered on HBO, I think, late last year. It's a TV adaptation of one of my all-time favorite book series by Philip Pullman. The thing is, it came out and I was dying to watch it. And then I thought, well, this is something I need to kind of keep and savor and treat myself to and not binge all at once. And so now seemed like the perfect time to watch a series about the world ending. So, yes, that's what I did. But, you know, the thing is, it's based on a young adult. It's based on a young adult series. And it's one of those that doesn't wear the trappings of that genre too overtly, which I really like. It's actually this grand world, you know, ending saga between science and religion, between truth and belief. And it's set in a different world that's kind of parallel to ours, where people have what you call demons, which are sort of animal forms or extensions of our souls. So there's a lot going on there. The world that the main character lives in, her name is Lyra, is a sort of steampunk version of Oxford. It's great fun. And the adaptation is, while not perfect, I think a really pretty good version of what the books were.
How many episodes?
Eight episodes so far, which seems to cover just about the first book and a little bit of the second. I don't know if you guys remember this really horrible adaptation of the series, The Golden Compass.
With Daniel. Yes.
Yeah. So this is essentially the same story, except that was terrible and best forgotten. And this is the only one I'm going to remember from now on.
This is the one with the polar bear.
Yes. Yes, Ian McKellen voiced the polar bear in that one, which was probably the only thing that was good about that movie. This one has not someone I know, but really the polar bear is awesome in this one.
It's interesting because I haven't read His Dark Materials, always meant to, one of those, but I've actually read not so great reviews, and I was a little disappointed when I saw them, because it's such a stellar cast. It's I watched the trailer, it looked kind of awesome, and then I think because I hadn't read it, because the reviews were sort of middling, I was like, I don't know, okay, maybe I can kind of take a rain check on this. So it's exciting to know that there's something I can add to the list that I had previously taken off.
It is a really good cast. So you have James McAvoy, you have Lin-Manuel Miranda, you have Ruth Wilson. And I think, look, it's not... I would say that if you're a fan of the book, there's a lot that they take shortcuts on, in a way that things that develop over chapters in the book sometimes happens very quickly in the show, and you do feel a little bit like, how come things are so convenient, or how come people always show up at the right time when something seems dire, which doesn't happen so much in the book. But overall, I think for a series that's been considered nearly unadaptable, it's off to a pretty good start, I thought.
Cool. Arvin?
So I wanted to talk about if Beale Street could talk first, but then I won't. I think I'll talk about John Mayer's current mood first, because it's
that
so
took
weird.
A sharp left turn.
Yeah, so just a bit of like context. This started when Sharmila sent a video of John Mayer sort of like making fun of Gal Gadot's Imagine.
Which he also made fun of intentionally last week.
Yeah, yeah. So what I did was I went to his like Instagram page, and then he has this thing called Current Mood, where he sort of just sits in front of a very cozy looking backdrop of a city at night and just talks about current issues of the world, or you know, stuff that's happening, or how to deal with anxiety, or you know, just how to stay at home and work from home, or you know, what to do when you're sort of shut in. And yesterday he had like Dave Chappelle on the show. Like he called Dave Chappelle, and Dave Chappelle was talking to him about stuff, which is fun. I can't remember what they were talking about, because it's that kind of useless. It's that sort of information that you don't have to like retain or keep in your head. But it's one of the best celebrity work from home ideas that I've seen. It's you know, he does it like every night. It's consistent. I don't know much about John Mayer's like music or you know, the stuff. I cannot tell you like what song comes from which album. I don't hate his music, but it's not something that I would put on like on purpose. But this is something that I've like checked out, even not at night, but you know, the next day when I have nothing to do, I'll go to like Current Mood just to see what he's talking about, just to see what he's saying to his followers, and you know, how he's dealing with it, and how him and his friends are dealing with it, I guess, because it's very non-celebrity for a celebrity as big as John Mayer. That's the best way I can put it.
So his social media presence has been kind of interesting for a time, right? Because he was a bit of a playboy, I think, early on. And then after that, he started getting hated on by all the women that he was a playboy with, who were equally famous. And then I think he had to take a little bit of a break from public life as such because of that reputation. And then he slowly started creeping on back in the comments and showing up. Yeah. And I don't know if you guys are aware of an Instagram profile called Comments by Celebs.
No.
I mean, it's the epitome of pointless, but kind of great. Basically, it's an Instagram that collects comments by celebs on posts, and then they post it, and then it becomes a meta commentary because the celebs come to comment on that post about their comment, and so they it's become quite a thing. They also have a podcast and stuff, and like it's generally kind of good spirited, which is nice. And John Mayer, I first became aware of new John Mayer because of Comments by Celebs, because he kept showing up there, making fun of himself, being really lighthearted, and I was like, you seem like good company.
I did not know there was a new John Mayer. So when I sent that video to Arvin, I was like, hang on, I used to really dislike this guy. When did he become kind of funny and self-aware and actually kind of worth listening to? Not his music,
so
but him as a person.
Yeah, so that's the thing. He's like super self-aware. I think he's like sort of compartmentalized himself to his younger version, which I think ended in like, what, 2013 or 2014. And now he's like this sort of slightly more mature, slightly funnier, slightly more self-aware, very, very down-to-earth sense of humor celebrity who makes music that isn't as popular as it used to be. Like his music doesn't like hit the chart, you know, isn't on like chart toppers or whatever. But like you said, Lynn, he's someone who's nice to hang out with, I think. And that's why I keep watching Current Moods. I don't know how long I'm going to keep watching it for. But for the last week, I think I've checked out maybe 4 or 5 episodes in full, which is weird, which is such a weird thing to do.
Yeah, so I also had one that I was going to recommend more sincerely, but I'll save that for the next bit because I wanted to talk a bit more at length. But I will say that in line with celebrities who are good company, Chrissy Teigen, right? You know, famous for pretty much being a wit, for being kind of funny and interesting, and for her commentary on Twitter and on Instagram. I just wanted to say that earlier this week, her daughter Luna had 2 soft toys that got married, and and she live streamed it on Instagram. And it included a serenade by John Legend, because of course, they baked the cake. There was a whole like walking down the aisle. She officiated it. And I think it is peak COVID-19 madness. Like, this is what happens. Even if you have a beautiful backyard, even if you're living in Malibu, even if you're John Legend and Chrissy Teigen, at some point you end up officiating a stuffed toy wedding, and you know, and the commentary on the side of it was brilliant. Anyway, it's just, these are the things we need, guys, at this point in time. So on today's Popcorn Culture, we're talking about all the things that we've been watching from home. As always, please let us know. At some point, we are going to run out of things to watch and we all need to help each other out. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. And of course, if you would like to make a list, you know, say something longer, you can write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
All right, guys, today on It's Alive, we're here with the wonderful Samin from Salt, Fat, Heat, Acid.
Something like
it's one of the four. You put it together. Hey, guys, today on It's Alive, I'm here with the wonderful Samin from Salt, Fat, Acid. Oh, Jesus.
Let me join. I'm Samin.
It was fun.
I wrote a book, Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. I made a show. We went to Italy. Brad watched it. He said, Samin, can you teach me how to make this focaccia? And I said, if you pay me $20,000.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to Popcorn Culture, brought to you remotely, super remotely, in fact. At least last week, some of us were in the same room. Today, we are all, you know, struggling through, figuring things out over video chat. Hi, guys. So you are with Lynn, of course, as well as Sharmila and Arvin. We're talking about the things that we've been watching from home. And okay, so far what we've had is His Dark Materials. And then
John Mayer's current mood.
I'm going to also talk about something that's free to watch on YouTube, and that is the Bon Appetit Test Kitchen. So I've spoken about this before at length. I love them. They are like The Office, but with real people and cooking. It's just the best thing in the world. It's a very warm-hearted space to be welcomed into. So what it is really is, in the whatever floor of Condé Nast the test kitchen is on, Bon Appetit, of course, being the food magazine. Can I call it venerable? Sure, the venerable magazine. But the test kitchen is really where they test out their recipes, the recipes that eventually make it into the magazine. And what they've done is they've created this fantastic YouTube channel with different shows that they're releasing at different times. So, for example, there's the It's Alive with Brad Leone, which is all about fermentation. He's making kombucha, he's making kimchi, he's making miso. Then there's Reverse Engineering with Chris Morocco, where he's given a dish, he's blindfolded, and he has to kind of figure out, based on smell and taste only, what this dish is. There is Gourmet Makes, which is probably the best known of the lot, where you have Claire Saffitz, who is making in that kitchen her version of packaged snacks. So it began with Twinkies. It's since gone on to Oreos. It's gone on to Skittles. And the beauty of it is watching them all be friends with one another, be very real. In the case of Gourmet Makes, it's watching somebody fail and refuse to fail and just like try over and over again until, you know, she is going to get the sugar coating heaven or whatever. Yeah, so it's just the best thing. They have really great real life chemistry. And because normally they film in the test kitchen, last week they released a video of them, like us, recording at home in their own home kitchens. And it was the most heartwarming thing, because if you've built a relationship with these people, then you just want to see them and you want to see what they're up to. And, you know, having them all talk to you and say, yeah, we're all in this together. It's still your crew. We'll just be cooking from home, all on their own little tripods and whatever. It's just the best thing. So I would recommend Bon Appetit YouTube channel as a whole, the best ever.
Now, is it the kind of cooking program or show that's going to make me feel like I should also, and I can also do this? Or is it the kind of stuff where I'm going to feel like I'll never be able to do the stuff they do?
There's a good mixture. So okay. With It's Alive, Brad is very like, like where everyone else is very precise, he's like, yeah, whatever, some salt. just do what tastes good. They all have very different personalities, so it's very like specific to the chef or the cook. But overall, you will feel like you're watching The Office minus the actual slapstickness of it. But the way they all get along, the way they talk to each other, the way they talk to you, it's just, yeah, like I call them my friends, like a loser, but I feel it.
Is this like something that used to be on TV and now is like a YouTube show, or is it like a YouTube thing? Like they're YouTubers.
It's a YouTube thing. They're not even YouTubers. They are food editors. They're people who work in the magazine, but they've become this huge YouTube presence, and it's just nice, guys. Like I don't know what's the term that people use online. This is wholesome content. Like this is as wholesome as it gets. And
well, the office with food is a pretty great sell.
I would say like just give it a try, because I know we're all Office fans. Mm-hmm. I feel like you can't go wrong. What else do we have? Do we have something else that's equally wholesome, or do we want to take a dive down the
road? Well, okay, if we're going wholesome, then I'll dob in, especially because of the YouTube thing, because YouTube left me running into this rabbit hole that I did not expect, which was classic Disney shorts.
Johnny Fedora met Alice Bluebonnet in the window of a department store. Was love at first sight, and they promised one night they'd be sweethearts forevermore. Johnny would serenade Alice, toorelay, toorelay, toorelloo. He sang of a beautiful palace, of a beautiful hat box for two.
Basically those like 1950s onwards short, you know, silly symphonies, Make My Music, all those like little short films which now Pixar places in front of full-length features. You know, I rediscovered a bunch. I went looking for one that I particularly love, which is Johnny Fedora and Alice Bluebonnet. It's sung by the Andrews sisters, and it's about two hats in a hat in a storefront that fall in love and are separated. It's got beautiful music. And then that just led me down this path of like days on end of just watching all these different shorts. And what I realized was, back then, these shorts were not made for children. I mean, you can argue that a lot of the animated features now cross that boundary really well, but those really weren't, because they use people like Benny Goodman and Dinah Shore. And, there's this gorgeous animated short called, I think it's called If the Cats, the Cats Are In It or something. And it's like, it comes to life as it's being drawn. So you see the paintbrushes drawing things and then they come to life. And Benny Goodman Trio is like playing the music for the background. It's just beautiful. And I think it was really one of those moments where, you always want to sit and watch these and you never really make the time for them. Mm-hmm. And some of them, I don't remember watching them since I was a kid. So like Three Amigos, for instance. Or, Three Caballeros, one with Donald and his two other, one is but, a rooster, one is a parrot. Yeah, that's right. So I just had just the most delightful time catching up with all of these shorts. And I would highly recommend just going out and looking for them.
Are these on like an official YouTube thing or?
A lot of them are, but the so like Disney Vivo, for instance, their YouTube channel and all that. And then there are a whole bunch of other just uploaded versions online, which the quality is pretty good as well and definitely worth them. Spotify has a lot of the songs as well, so if you just want the songs without watching the shorts, but I would totally, and the style that we've come to think of as Disney. It's so different back then. Like they experiment so much with styles. Like some of them look like Archie comics. So it's just really interesting.
Like Steamboat Willie started as a short, right? I mean, that's
yes, basically the granddaddy of all of them.
Yeah.
No, but you know, the thing is, I think my struggle would be, I don't know what they're called. So while you were talking, I was thinking about the ones that I grew up watching and how a lot of them, you know, for years, for years during school holidays, I tried my best to run off the edge of beds and sofas and suspend in the air for a second, because that's how those shorts taught me.
Yeah.
If you were running fast enough, you don't fall right away. And so I thought that if I could just keep it going, maybe I could fly. And like that's how those shorts influenced me, as well as with the idea of how you eat corn. I don't know if you guys remember.
We all did it. Yes,
correct. We all did it and failed desperately and got corn stuck in our teeth. So I'm kind of like really intrigued by the idea that they're available, and I also think I will meet them on some sort of channel, simply because I do not remember what they're called.
I would suggest like typing in silly symphonies, and then you'll keep seeing things that look familiar in the, you know, suggested view. And yeah, that worked for me. That's why I call it a rabbit hole, because it's just next, 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 next.
Let the YouTube algorithm like help you out.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
All right. We're talking today about what we're watching from home. So we've covered quite a lot of ground across quite a few different platforms. If you would like to weigh in, let us know. You can, of course, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be back after the news in order to continue the conversation. Keep it here on Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
If it's a quiet night out at the beach and your ex-old lady suddenly out of nowhere shows up with a story about her current billionaire land developer boyfriend and his wife and her boyfriend and a plot to kidnap the billionaire and throw him in a loony bin...
I need your help, Doc.
Maybe you should just look the other way. But if you're Doc, it may all start to get a little peculiar after that.
Michael Z. Wolfman.
And Mickey Wolfman.
Mickey Wolfman.
Has vanished.
So where would I find him?
He's technically Jewish, but wants to be a Nazi.
And a girl don't necessarily want to get into difficulties with those folks.
You got a spare picture I could borrow?
Mm-hmm. Hello, you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin, and Sharmila. If we all sound like we're not in the studio, it is because... we're not. We're at home. And that is the premise of our show. We're going to be talking to you about what we've been watching from home during this work from home period. Arvin, what you got?
So I want to continue on the wholesome thing, but I can't, because I'm going to talk about Inherent Vice with Joaquin Phoenix. Came out in 2014. I didn't know it was that old. Paul Thomas Anderson made the movie. And I've seen the whole thing. It's about 2.5 hours long. It's a very long watch. But I can't tell you exactly what it's about, because I don't understand myself. There's a lot of like, it's a lot of, I think it's set in the 60s or 70s. There's a lot of like stylized costumes. There's a lot of big set pieces. The whole thing
is quite
looks,
trippy.
It's very trippy. And there's a lot of scenes where you're not sure if Joaquin's thinking about something or if he's actually there, which is, you know, which is similar for a lot of like Joaquin movies. But this one sort of it's not as violent, but it's also super convoluted, and you have to listen to everything that they say and every single mannerism that each character like sort of puts out. And it has like a stacked cast. There's like Josh Brolin's in it and Owen Wilson's in it and Reese Witherspoon's in it. But yeah, so I think I would have to watch it again. It's really nice. Like, I really enjoyed it. But there are like so many details in the movie that I didn't latch onto, because it's based on a book, and it plays like a book in the sense that there's so much dialogue. There are so many words that people just say one after another, and they talk over each other. And by the end of it, I'm like, what exactly happened? And I need to like revisit this. But yeah, if I was going to recommend something to like anyone, it would be Inherent Vice, because it's sort of, again, it's one of those things that's like removed from the stuff that's happening, but it's also interesting enough to keep you like glued and watching. And it's not a lazy watch. I think it needs your focus and attention, and it's nice.
Just to quickly jump in, that we did have a listener, Joe, I believe, from Old Klang Road last week, who specifically is also a Blu-ray DVD enthusiast. I didn't know there were that many. And who actually asked Arvind to watch this. And this is like an independent thought, right? Like it happened at the same time, which is kind of cool.
It happened at the same time. And I watched it on Blu-ray. I didn't stream it anywhere. I had it on Blu-ray. I hadn't opened it before that. And I took it out that night to watch it. And then you told me that Joe... who also probably has the Blu-ray, I think, wanted to listen to what we thought. And yeah, I thought it was super confusing and I'd have to watch it again. But I love it. I don't understand it as much as I want to.
So is the payoff worth it then? Is investing that much time to emerge confused worth it?
So I don't know if there's a payoff with Inherent Vice. I think there is, the whole movie is super monotonous. It plays like one flat line, but a very interesting flat line. Like it's like very noir, and it has like a lot of graininess, and it has like a lot of people not overacting, but acting really well. You know what I mean? There's like strong performances.
I read the book, and based off of the book alone, I would 100% watch the film. I mean, like, and then you add to that P.T. Anderson and the cast, and yeah, it's a stellar recommendation. I mean, even if you don't get it, at least it's a good way to spend time not getting stuff.
Like a huge chunk of time, like 2.5 hours of time. So if you're bored and you're stuck at home and you just want the time to pass by, like, this will do it. Like, this will do it, like, for sure.
Sharmila?
Well, I'm going to pivot from what Arvin was talking about, and I have been also revisiting The Good Place, which is a series that I started watching, I think, about 2 years ago, and then kind of took a bit of a hiatus from. I haven't yet gotten to the final season, which has already aired in the US, because I don't have access to it just yet. But yes, I've just finished season two again. And I think there's this thing with revisiting TV shows, right, where some of them, like Friends or Will and Grace, are kind of extremely bingeable. Good Place, I'm getting the sense, beyond the first season, is not. And I'm not sure why I'm feeling that. I kind of feel like it gets a bit repetitive. Like the second time around, all the surprises are not there anymore. And that kind of, it's still a nice watch. I don't necessarily think it's the kind of thing that 10 years from now I'll say, oh, I'm good, I'm bored, I'm going to put on The Good Place. Whereas I still do that with, say, Friends.
It's also because The Good Place is philosophical at its heart, right? I think that for me, The Good Place is more like a book. Like I would watch it or I would reread it, but maybe every few years. It's not something that I would just have on in the background. And I also don't think it rewards background watching because it's quite detailed. Like there's a lot of stuff in there. Like once you get to season three and there's the Jeremy Beremy stuff and, yes, you know, the stuff where it starts being about time and loops and things, it does start to get pretty difficult. But it's such a good show.
Oh, it's a great show. And the first season is really one of the best sort of series openers I've ever seen. Like, I loved the first season.
So I can't say what Jamila Jamil's tweet is like, but she has a tweet that picked up a lot of steam and went like super viral. And I can't say what it is, because if I say what it is, then it's a spoiler for season one. Mm-hmm. But if you go to a Twitter and then you see what she said, you'll get it. And it's also very sort of like timely. She tweeted it because of what's happening now in the world and stuff. And that's all I can say, because if you've seen The Good Place, then you know what I'm talking about and you would have seen the tweet. If you haven't seen The Good Place, then you shouldn't go see her tweet, because it is a major spoiler if you're trying to get into the show. But yeah, go look at her Twitter page and what she says.
Okay, I'm going to talk about something that I think, like, I can't believe we've taken this long to get to, and that is Tiger King. Because, I think that I'm not, it's one of those viewing experiences that feels really, really collectivist, almost like we were all in cinemas, but at home, because over the weekend, it felt as if everybody was talking about Tiger King. Like everybody had started it, everybody was watching it. And for the uninitiated, Tiger King tells, it's a docu-series, and it tells the story of a man running a zoo, an exotic zoo in Oklahoma. His name is Joe Exotic. And
sure it is.
No, but guys, all right, so you meet Joe Exotic. in the first episode, and you think like, all right, this is the pinnacle of how this is going to be. And then every subsequent episode introduces you to someone else, introduces you to some other story within it. And so what starts off as what looks like a documentary about big cats in captivity and animal trafficking really becomes then a story about narcissism, about murder, about embezzlement, about cons. I don't even have the words for how crazy this gets. And everyone who tells you that it gets crazier, they're right. It gets crazier. And I mean, like, at one point, somebody loses their arm and goes back to work in the zoo 7 days later. Like, 7 days after they lose an arm. This person is one of the best, sanest people on that show. It's just, I finished it in a day. I couldn't recommend it more. It's very, very absorbing. It is a little dark, I have to say, because it's sort of a look into, I think, the MAGA version of America. It's a look into how America, I think, in many ways, is such a big country that it takes all sorts. And it also, and you can't account for everybody under law. There are no laws that can contain Americans. So that's kind of where the show goes. And it's both deeply entertaining, very thought-provoking, and a good way to spend, I don't know, under 7 hours, but like it's 7 episodes long. It's fantastic.
So I didn't know how to like box this, all the stuff that you were saying, until you said MAGA. And then I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
At one point he runs MAGA for president. Sense. Joe Exotic runs for president, just so everyone knows.
I actually knew this, but at that time, I just remembered him as the guy that owns the zoo of illegal exotic animals.
Legal friends.
Sorry.
He goes to great pains to remind you that at the time, it was legal. And like, it's just a fantastic thing. I wasn't sure. You know, it's that usual thing where everybody's really hyped it up, so you're not sure if you want to participate. Mm-hmm. And then you do, and it's the best.
Wait, I have one question. The guy who loses his arm, is it animal-induced of arm losing?
Someone chop it off is what you're asking.
There are two separate people who have lost limbs within the show. One person, it's due to animals. The other person, it's due to zip lining. So
of course it is.
Yeah,
So anyways, Tiger King, cannot recommend it enough. We're talking today about what we've been watching from home. It's been a pretty varied list so far. Again, please send us your thoughts. What have you been watching? Are you up to speed on Tiger King? Do you want to talk about it? WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio and write to us at movies@bfm.mine. 'Cause I saw Tiger, now I understand. I saw Tiger, Tiger saw me.
Farming frustrated minds. BFM 89.9. Strumming my pain with his
fingers. You ready for this? Singing my
life with his words. I've never been more ready for anything in my whole life. Killing me softly
with his song. We are drinking to new life. Tish gonna have Fonny's baby.
I hope it's a boy.
We're gonna have a baby. I'll have you out of here before it is.
You sure about that?
Hello, you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin, and Sharmila, who are all working from home and also telling you what we're watching from home. So a very long list across different platforms and mediums that we've covered so far. We've included internet videos. We've talked about movies. We've also talked about series. How do we want to finish this off?
I thought I would kind of finish this off by being a little slightly more atas than I have been thus far in the internet show, at least. But also because I think in the tradition of this show, particularly with a lot of whiplash going on, where we move from Disney to Tiger King, I feel like it's apropos. I found out over the weekend, thanks to our station manager, Caroline Oh, that the Bolshoi Theatre was streaming a bunch of its ballets for free for the first time ever in the history of the theatre. And so I actually spent the weekend watching not one, but two ballets. I watched Swan Lake, and I also watched Sleeping Beauty. And it was beautiful. I mean, I've never watched Sleeping Beauty live before. I've watched Swan Lake, like versions of it, but not by a sort of prestige ballet company. It also gave me a lot of questions about the difference between watching something like this live versus watching a recorded version, because in some ways, you know, you're in the best seat in the house. You're literally almost sitting on the stage with them, and you can see the details versus the tickets I can afford if I went to the Bolshoi is probably like nosebleed, right? However, there's a wall there that I cannot cross. So in some ways, I really loved that I could watch this, and it was delightful. On the other hand, I also thought about whether post-COVID, this is something I would consistently do. Because previously, I've never particularly been interested in things like National Theatre Live, which, you know, you can watch plays from home or whatever. So this was an interesting experience for me. And I think something a lot of people are discovering as well in this watching from home world.
Doesn't it need like the, you know, like the environment and the lights and the stage to sort of make it work? Because that's the only reason I go watch plays and I don't watch them at home, because it doesn't work on like a monitor. The same way maybe you could watch like a big screen movie on a small screen somewhat. I don't think plays work at home, which is why when I saw like a few write-ups about these things, I was like, maybe I won't, because things like musicals, sometimes there's like people who jump off stage and sort of interact with the crowd, or they'll get you involved with the play itself. Sometimes the lights just like shut off and you don't see anyone, and then the spotlight turns on and there's one person in the middle of the stage doing like a monologue. Those things sort of lose their effect when it's at home, or when you're on your sofa, or when you're watching it in bed, which is how I feel. I don't know. I don't know if it works for everyone, but that's one of the reasons why I just don't watch stage shows at home.
I think there's something to do with the immediacy of watching it live, of being surrounded by people, knowing that this group of people will never see this quite this way again. And also just that idea, you know, and then basic things like the sound. You can never capture live sound from your speakers. But that said, again, add like the flip side of that is I can see the ballerina doing her, you know, 60 twirls, which I wouldn't be able to see live. I can see the beading on Sleeping Beauty's costumes, which if I'm sitting way back in the hall, I won't be able to see. So there are some trade-offs. I don't know. I think I'm slowly warming up to it, especially for shows that maybe I'm never going to get a chance to watch.
No, I was just going to say that I have every intention of watching it, but I worry about that feeling of divide, you know, because the whole point of live performances is to watch it live. And I know that that's very wistful, almost silly to say at this point in time, and we don't know when we'll be able to go back and sit, you know, in close proximity with people again, which is sad. But I so badly, to me, I equate it to something like Hamilton, where it's a musical that I so badly want to be able to watch live. But you know what? If you're going to give me like this best seat in the house, uninterrupted view of like the finest performers, I'm going to take it, lah.
And Lin-Manuel versus somebody playing the third version of the musical in their touring, you know, there's so many variables.
I am just going to change the mood entirely, because it feels right to do it here. At a point where people are talking about the Bolshoi, I would like to talk about Con Air. And
absolutely. What better segue?
No, because Con Air came on over the TV this weekend. And while watching it, I found myself saying out loud, like 4 or 5 times, man, this is the best. Man, this is the best. And as I was saying it, I thought, I have to talk about it, because there's something about peak Jerry Bruckheimer in that period of time, right? The early 2000s, late 90s. It was the 1-2 punch of Con Air and The Rock. And then later on, you had like Face Off, and they all have Nicolas Cage. And they're all these sort of high concept action insane films, right? Like with Con Air, you've got a Heart of Gold,
Convict.
Heart of Gold convict murderer person who just needs to get back to his daughter. John Malkovich and Steve Buscemi are like at their best. You know, and then you in The Rock, you've got like that, you've got just amazing insane scene after amazing insane scene, and Ed Harris monologuing like a champ. And it's just like there's something about the craziness and the adrenaline and the over the topness of those particular types of films, right? It's the Jerry Bruckheimer touch that make those films endlessly rewatchable and endlessly escapist. Like, it doesn't matter how bad real life is, because Cameron Poe, man, Cameron Poe is going to ensure that this plane is not blown up. And so, yeah, like, if you're looking for a mindless nothing, you know, you can leave it on, you will find yourself muttering, this is the best. I think Con Air, The Rock, Face Off, like the series of unutterably stupid films.
It's the Jerry Bruckheimer sort of like, it's the Jerry Bruckheimer way of putting people who cannot act into roles that need people who should be able to act. I'm not saying Nicolas Cage can't act. I'm just saying that he's not supposed to be playing those roles. Like, he's not supposed to have long hair.
He has an Oscar.
No, I love Nicolas Cage. Like, I would watch like a whole marathon of like Nicolas caginess. But you know, with the hand, he doesn't even have like an accent, or was there like some other movie? I'm sure he has some southern accent.
Of course he has an accent.
Yeah,
you should have put the bunny back in the box. Come on, guys. See what I mean? Yeah. This reaction.
Yes.
This is exactly why Con Air is an important watch from home recommendation, because it's just so bonkers.
Wait, Con Air or Face Off? Ooh. If you had to choose,
I would pick Face Off, but only because Face Off is just like the best.
I loved Face Off, but I have such a fondness for John Cusack that I'm gonna go with Con Air.
John Cusack's in Con Air?
Guys.
Yeah, yes,
wait, wasn't that some of the movie? He is in Con Air. Okay. He is in John Cusack.
He's a good agent.
He's the good guy. Yeah. Okay.
Hang on. Now you have to break the tie. Is it Face Off or Con Air?
Face Off. I mean, John Travolta. Nicolas Cage, like swapping faces, and that whole the premise. Like, you know, you take my face, I'll take your face. I'm like, yeah, okay. Okay, I'm on. I'm on the bandwagon.
I see you guys that, and I raise you Ving Rhames and Danny Trejo. Con Air, guys. Anyway, all right, fine. There are no real losers, I think, in between those choices.
Triple bill is the only logical answer. Con Air and Face Off, The Rock.
Yes.
Okay, that wins. That wins.
Arvind, do you want to close off on a different note, a similar note? I don't know.
I can't top Con Air, but you know, if Beale Street could talk, so I wanted to. That was supposed to be like my original thing. If Beale Street could talk, so I wanted to watch this for like a couple of years. I finally found it on streaming, and I was able to like purchase it, and I watched it, and it's so beautiful, and it's so well made, because it has like a kind of a warmth and a coziness, and it isn't set in like, you know, current times, but it talks about like important things like racism and, you know, the problems of African-American people in the U.S. Basically, it's about this woman whose husband is wrongly convicted, and she's trying to get him out of jail, and they sort of show you in flashbacks how they got together, and she's also pregnant with his child. And it's very sweet. It's not as heavy as you would expect it to be. It's made by Barry Jenkins, but it's also very lighthearted for a very serious topic. And again, you know, the way it's shot, the colors and the mood, and even the mood lighting, the music especially. I think the music is by Nicholas Bertel, something like that. But overall, it's like, imagine if something like Up with that sort of music, and it was speaking about stuff that's like super important to like the American climate, like racism and equality and, you know, human rights and stuff. But highly recommended. So there's not much more to say about that movie, but it's just that if you want to watch something that's cozy and intimate, but also very important, If Beale Street Could Talk.
So this is pre-Moonlight Barry Jenkins, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Because I love Moonlight, but it's not a movie I find easy to watch again.
It's post-Moonlight.
It's post.
Is it? It's post. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
But that's the thing that I wanted to. I'm so glad to hear you say that it's a somewhat light touch, because I love Moonlight. Moonlight is one of my all-time favorite films. It's so beautiful and moving, and it just kind of gets under your skin and lives with you for like a few weeks, a month. But like you, Sharmila, I don't think that I could rewatch that. It was so heavy. And so while I so badly wanted to watch If Beale Street Could Talk, in my head, it has the weight of it being a Barry Jenkins film. And so it was kind of like, okay, well, I gotta get in this. I gotta prep myself. I gotta, you know, and in the same way that I had to gear myself up to watch Moonlight, actually. So I wasn't sure, but like, is this an any mood kind of movie?
Yeah, it's a you know, over dinner into the night kind of a movie, if that makes any sense. Because you have to focus. You know, it you can't watch it in the middle of an afternoon when you've got other things to do. Like, it doesn't work. Like, it has to be like end of day. But also, it doesn't have to. You don't have to emotionally prep yourself as much. But I don't want to undersell it. It has a lot of like heavy themes, a lot of heavy themes that might. But it has heavy themes that are not going to disturb you over the course of a week, but they will stick with you in a way that will help you. Like, you could think about them, you could sort of go over them, you could discuss the movie, but it isn't going to like going to be like, you know, it's not emotionally scarring, even though some of the stuff that happens is super heavy and real and dark and deep. But yeah, so, you know, I don't know how he does it, but it's so like masterfully done, to take all those things and then like display it in a way that isn't going to, you know, it isn't going to upset you for like a long, long time. Not like Moonlight. So it isn't as heavy as Moonlight. It's a much lighter movie with equal importance, I guess.
So that just about covers us. We've been talking today about what we've been watching from home. It's quite a long list, and I think that we'll put down all of it into the podcast. So if you've missed what we've discussed, you can download our podcast, listen to the whole thing, or just kind of read and check out what we've kind of the listed recommendations, I suppose. In the meantime, of course, let us know what you've been watching. Let us know what you would like us to watch if you have any homework to assign. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio and write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.